My name is Elisa Vigil, and I worked as an intern with Bay Area Community Resources on the Sunset Russian Tobacco Education Project, and my co-presenter is Lynette Escobar.
I'm Lynette, and I started as the first project director of this project in 2000. I worked there from 2000 to 2005. I came back from 2010 to 2012 and just recently have left again, but we're going to give you contact info of the people who are still there. I also visited Russia in 1999, where I did some documentation of the tobacco environment in Russia at that time.
We have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so setting the scene. To ask everybody here, what do you think of when you think of Russian speaker? Russian speaker. When you think of a Russian speaker,
somebody
what
from
comes to
Russia,
mind?
What comes to mind?
What did you just say? Excuse me, what?
What did you just say? Okay.
I wonder what they're saying.
Yeah.
Wonder what they're saying.
Mostly the language. Wondering why they're smoking so much. In general. Okay. Yeah. In general, perhaps things have changed, but 10 years ago, when people thought of Russian speakers, they thought of somebody holding a glass of vodka and a cigarette in the other hand, and that was the happy life. And looking at the statistics that we have here, it was unfortunately more true than not. In Russian-speaking countries and in the immigrant population here in the United States, we saw a male smoking rate of 60%. A female smoking rate anywhere between 14 and 35%, and a life expectancy of only 57 years. So when the Sunset Russian Tobacco Education Project opened its doors, the community laughed. They actually thought that it was comical to take on the work of taking tobacco out of the Russian-speaking community.
And in 2000, when the state of California is a leader in tobacco control, our smoking rate right now is 11.9%. So comparing that to a male smoking rate of 60%, it was a huge culture shock. And the way the state of California writes their RFPs are, hey, what are you going to do to address smoking at the policy level? So the Newcomers Health Program, part of the San Francisco Department of Public Health, partnered with Bay Area Community Resources, a nonprofit, to respond to that RFP and wrote this wonderful work plan that involved policy work. Policy work, when people have had no history of even public health or prevention. The Soviet Union had just fallen in 1991. So the state had the foresight to say, hey, let's move way back. We changed our work plan to be at a more individual level. We offered cessation classes. We offered secondhand smoke awareness classes. And we did a media campaign with the buses. And this is one of our first posters around awareness for secondhand smoke. And I tell you, we went and talked to different community leaders, and that laughing was definitely the response, like, what are you doing? Or we'd give a secondhand smoke presentation, and people would say, I don't believe that. I don't believe secondhand smoke kills. It's like, oh, what do you mean you don't believe that? We're kind of not used to that sort of questioning in public health. But the other thing about this community is we'd hear this quote a lot, a man who doesn't smoke and doesn't drink dies a healthy man. So basically, it doesn't matter what you do, you can quit smoking or not quit smoking, but whether you get lung cancer or heart disease, that's just fate.
Okay.
Oh, I'm still talking. So these are some pictures I took in 1999. So as the tobacco industry had all these restrictions in the states, they saw this as the Wild West. So on the left, you can see this is right outside a beautiful palace in St. Petersburg, and it's just filled with Marlboro and Camel umbrellas. And then these little kiosks were everywhere. And we had some Russian advertising executives come and meet with us, and most of them were smokers. And one man just talked about how they had lived through this communist time, no advertising, to boom, every surface is filled with a tobacco or alcohol ad. And I was really struck by what he said. He said you could physically feel the impact, and he like grabbed his stomach. And I just thought it's such a social justice issue of here we are kind of pushing their influence out of our country, and they're going in for the kill in other countries.
Okay, so unique considerations. I'm going to backtrack a bit to say that Lynette was working on this project 10 years ago. I came in last year as an intern. I was at San Francisco State University finishing up my degree in health education, and there was literally a stack of possible internships. Everybody chose. I got the very last one. The last one on the table, Russian smoking project. Okay, I wanted something, juicy, like working with sex workers in the Tenderloin or something along those lines. And I took this smoking with tobacco control project. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do that. I came in and was charmed out of my pants with the women who are working on this project. I had so much to learn about their culture and their unique past. Starting was that there are Russian speakers in the Bay Area. There are immigrants. I didn't really know. I didn't go out to the Richmond that much at that time. That's a district here in San Francisco. So the population of Russian speakers in San Francisco or in the Bay Area is primarily Jewish. Which we'll speak more on in a little bit. They have a unique sociopolitical history, meaning that, the Soviet Union was a very unique time and place in history. Because of the communism in the Soviet Union, there is a widespread mistrust of authority. Everybody who is in the Soviet Union was educated in the Soviet Union. There is I don't know what the statistic is, but they're extremely highly educated in the area. And volunteering and prevention are completely foreign concepts. Volunteering in communism does not happen, and prevention in a fatalistic culture also does not happen. So then we have to ask the question, or I learned that 10 years prior to me coming in, they asked the question, how do you reach this population? I think the big answer is that we need to reframe. Everything needed to be reframed. So another unique consideration that I learned mostly from one of our coworkers, her name is Olga Radom, beautiful woman, is that family is everything. Really down to, in the United States, we have our schoolmates and we have our classmates, and many cultures do. In this particular culture, the family is everything, and it's a female head of household. The female is responsible for changing attitudes.
So we invited wives to our quit clinics. That's the big thing there.
Word of mouth is the preferred mode of information. So you go to the doctor, in the Soviet Union, you go to the doctor prescribes you whatever he thinks you need. You don't ask questions to the doctor. The doctor tells you what he thinks or she thinks that you need. And when you get home, if your friend tells you, I was prescribed that medication, didn't work, chances are you're not going to take it, because it's the word of mouth that really has the weight in this situation. Lastly for this, I learned, that education is status. So what were they originally called? They weren't originally education specialists.
Health educators.
Yeah, so the health educators needed to be reframed into cessation specialists trained by the American Heart Association. That made them very, very official and therefore credible in the community.
I should say I learned a lot too. I'm not from the community. So a big thing is that we needed to hire someone from the community. Well, it would be great if we had somebody who worked in public health or but there was no public health in the Soviet Union. We could have a doctor or a nurse, but we were really trying to do something at a more community level. So I hired this guy, Sasha, who was an artist. He didn't know how to keep a file folder, but he was a very resourceful refugee. He knew how to make connections and get people together, and he's a big reason why this project was a success. You can teach anybody how to be organized, or you can be organized for them, but you can't really teach those community building skills. So that was great. We also reframe things to be culturally appropriate. Our work plan, for example, had smoke-free home pledges included, which is kind of a standard thing here in California. But if you hand somebody who used to be forced to sign pledges to communism this pledge sheet, it's just not going to work unless you really explain it and kind of reframe it a different way. So we were very careful with that. Also, our community is very low socioeconomic. They've lost a lot of status coming here, but they are not low literacy. So we had to be really careful with our materials. Our materials are very high level, lots of facts, statistics, and we cite them. We also made sure to identify community leaders and get them on board, outreach at community events, and create culturally competent media. The other thing is, whenever our health worker goes to talk to someone, she tells them how she got their name, so how she knows them. Your aunt said that you might be interested in, and that's how she kind of gets in there. So that's very important, too.
So, a map of how far the project has come, showing that 10 years ago, or more than 10, 12 years ago, Sunset Russian Tobacco Education Project was a title of comedy. We were able to, or the project was able to go from being a policy-driven project down to a community-driven project and provide cessation and secondhand smoke education. Then we moved on to work with merchants and demand sponsorship in media and really to change the way that the streets looked and to help take down some of the tobacco advertising that was, you know, how do you say, populating the streets?
Yeah, I don't know if there was so much populating, but we sort of prevented it. We saw a little bit getting into the media and we put a stop to that, yeah.
And then now, the advocates are people who are, they're happening now, and I'm lucky enough to have met some of them myself. The project that when I walked in, I started working on smoke-free housing and, again, culturally competent media.
And assisted living facilities. So 12 years ago, we couldn't imagine working on a policy level, and now these advocates are going to landlords and asking for smoke-free policies. So it's been a huge community norm change.
And a note about the advocates. They are an interesting group of people. The main common denominator is that they're all Russian speakers. And that's about all they have in common. They are all different ages. They are not all from Russia. They're just from Russian-speaking countries, and they're a hoot to have around, let me tell you. Most of them are paid stipends as kind of a way to incentivize, but I think what's more incentivizing is having food and tea. This is culturally a must. If you're going to have anybody sitting around a table, you must feed them and give them some tea. And to celebrate, very important. In making effective materials, one must do more than just translate. This is actually a picture of Lynette and Olga in Ukraine. Who are you visiting with?
We're visiting with a cessation specialist, and you see behind us is one of our California ads, the Marlboro Man saying, it's just translated into Ukrainian, you know, I forgot, I missed my lung bob, I think. So we try to do more than just translate. We try to not just change words, but to actually look for culturally appropriate images. Should I move on?
Yeah, and the next slide is a really good example of what the focus group is, the advocates sitting around a table. We present all of the images to them, and their input is what designs with designs these images, and they really, really liked this. They thought that it just felt Russian, and it really made smoke seem like an angry, ugly thing that we don't want, and this was one of our bus ads. It ran on Muni.
Our graphic designer is from Ukraine, and so she is from the culture, and I actually talked to her about, like, hey, what are some fairy tales, or could we do something with that? So these are, on the left, you see these really ugly people. This is Baba Yaga and Cachet, and Baba Yaga is this witch that's super known. As soon as we showed her picture, everybody went, Baba Yaga, Baba Yaga, and Cachet is this man who lives forever. So we decided to show what would happen if they went into their old age with healthy air, and this brochure was to raise awareness about the issue of smoke-free policies in assisted living facilities. So you see Baba Yaga gets younger and happier, and even the cat is looking better with a smoke-free environment.
And this particular piece was extremely, or I think it was so interesting, because what we initially introduced to the focus group, to the group of advocates, looked nothing like this. They didn't like it. They thought that it was an ad for smoking. So we had to take a totally different route, and this is just an example of the importance of their input on the material.
And it takes this traditional Ukrainian image of bread and salt when you welcome someone into your home, and we were recruiting for new advocates. So, and we were showing them what the difference is between when we started and what happened now, both in California and in the former Soviet Union.
Okay. So, to summarize what I learned as an intern is that you cannot judge a community or a person based on what you think you know. You must ask. You must ask the questions. You must ask what it is that they need and what is important to them. Meeting the community where they are, essential, and knowing that if you're going to get a group together, they're not going to come back if there was no food and tea on that table. And you need them to come back. Empowering community members, taking the artist, as I met Sasha, he is an incredible artist, and as we all learned, an incredible community organizer. Creating culturally and linguistically appropriate interventions has reshaped my thoughts about what we can do in communities for communities to help change and promote health. And lastly, one must celebrate. The work that you do is no good unless you celebrate it.
This is our contact info, including the contact info of the current project director. And our story is a happy ending because our intern went on to do a great job working in Oakland with the community there. So we're very proud of her. And I'll just let you know that today the Russian Federation, Russia still has one of the world's highest smoking rates, 59%. Ukraine has had strong taxes and a ban. Oh, actually, there's been a ban on advertising in the former Soviet Union. And their smoking rate went down from 60% to 50% in the last 5 years. So there are things happening around the world around this.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions?
Are there any?
I have a question. You mentioned that you discovered it was primarily Jewish. My question is about the spiritual support system around the community, not just for Jewish, but in this case. Because I'm from Chicago, uh-huh. And the community, the Jewish community, is very strong.
Yeah.
And what I learned is that when you want to replace something, you have to have something. If you want to end smoking, you need to have something to replace it with.
Mm-hmm.
So did you discover any...
Well, I'll say one thing about the spiritual thing. Our population is primarily Jewish. They're culturally Jewish. Their religion was pretty much squashed in the Soviet Union. So there's a cultural identification. There's a big community in Sacramento that are Christian. So all of them came as refugees. I think religion is more important in the Sacramento community. You're right, though. We did talk about replacing it and creating community and doing things like if you were, your part of socializing was smoking the cigarettes with your guys, like we did talk about that in the quit clinics, like what could you do, but not in a spiritual sense necessarily. We've tried to work with some mental health providers. There is a high incidence of depression, especially with the loss of community and with linguistically isolated people. We also had funding for a while for a more holistic program called Let's Be Healthy to deal with chronic disease and to do cooking classes and walking groups and to really create community. But that is a huge issue, and there's a lot of somatized pain, so people saying they're in pain, but it's really this mental, you know, dissatisfaction with life.
And in general, when the what I've learned from being in the room with the advocates is that they simply like to come together. This project was more of an excuse for them to come and have something to talk about, and then to take the information and go have more to talk about outside. So in that way, I do think that it addressed
another form of support,
a major form of support in that way.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.